Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you one and all for taking some of your time and listening to the show wherever you are, whenever you are, because people are listening all over the world at their convenience. And that's an amazing thing about this technology and an amazing thing that I can sit here. I sit in one place, the studio's in another place, my guest is in a third place, and you're in a fourth place, and somehow we all get to do this together. How wonderful is that? So thank you for being with us. My guest tonight is Dr. Mario Beauregard, who is a neuroscientist who's doing hard science work about the stuff we talk about all the time, non-ordinary reality. How do you understand the realm that is non-physical? And we will be talking to him in just a moment after tonight's metaphysical musing. And there's a rant that I don't think I've done on the show, but that I kind of go off on periodically. Over 100 years ago now, Albert Einstein came up with a concept that was completely radical, and that was that everything is not just physical, but is also energy. So that everything is both a wave of electromagnetic radiation and also particles. And I read somewhere that in his notes, as he was just figuring it out, he said something like, in the math, it looks like the waves are lumpy. So he hadn't quite figured out that it was particles, but he figured out that there was something that wasn't just a wave at a single frequency. And that's absolutely fascinating. And the way the school system is set up in my country, physics is considered a science that you can only learn if you can do the math. And so most people who are not going in that direction never learn the rudiments of physics. They don't learn the most basic concepts. So the stuff Einstein came up with 100 years ago that's foundation of understanding how the world works, they don't even hear, much less quantum theory. But everything is energy and everything is also particles, and you can transfer E equals MC squared is about the two sides of the equation. You can make energy into matter and matter into energy, and there are experiments where that's been shown to be true, as strange as that may be. But it means something else to people who are doing work in which you shift your consciousness. It's an indication in a more concrete way, in a scientific way, that there's something behind this stuff. If you're focusing with your physical senses in the physical world, you will only see and understand and experience physical phenomena. If you shift your consciousness to that energy frequency-based world, all kinds of things are different. Time doesn't exist because time is part of the physical world. Space and distance don't exist, and all kinds of things are accessible. And people have been talking about this in recorded history for something like 9,000 years. That different kinds of mystical traditions have been talking about being able to shift your consciousness that way. The other really basic science thing that is also critical to understand in the work, in this seemingly mystical and spiritual work, which I think is pretty concrete actually, is that the observer of an experiment changes the outcome of the experiment. That means, if you look at it at all, you've already changed it. So not only is somebody who's working in the realm of consciousness capable of changing things, it's impossible for them not to. And that's what shamanic work is about. Shamanic work is observing in the non-physical, seeing things change, and watching something shift in the physical. It's pretty wild stuff. but it makes perfect sense in terms of the physics. So that there's all these really basic physics concepts that I really love to kick around with people, and most people don't even know them. So in my work, I'm not only the experimenter, I'm also the observer, and I am also part of the experiment. And I think that's true in all of science. But that it's not part of the framework. It's not the way things are looked at. If you're doing the kind of stuff that I do, it's really obvious that everything is interacting with everything else. So I'm very excited that we've got somebody who can talk about the cutting edge hard science that is already established about how it's the difference between what used to be called materialist science, where everything was based on the physical world, and post-materialist science. And we're going to be talking about that. And I'm excited to do that. So I'm going to end the metaphysical musing and introduce our guest, Dr. Mario Beauregard, who is at the University of Arizona. And Mario, thanks so much for taking some time with us.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm very excited about hearing the perspective on all of this stuff from the hard science perspective. You're a neuroscientist. Mm-hmm. You've written many papers and books on this cutting edge between the physical and the non-physical. And one of the things I'm fascinated with is this whole idea of, well, first of all, what I always ask my guests is, how did you wind up doing this? You know, what's your story? How did you wind up in this realm doing this high level of work that you do?
It started when I was 8 years old. I've had spiritual experiences and insights about the relationship between mind and brain and the soul and all these very deep questions. And it's at that time, at 8 years old, that I decided that I would become a scientist later on to explore the mysteries, about these fundamental issues. And I don't know why. I don't know why, because my parents were not, they were farmers, they were normal people, they were not mystical people, although they were Roman Catholic, they were going to church, but they were no mystics. And but for whatever reason, it was obvious that even at 8 years old, that the mind and the essence of a human being could not be reduced to the brain. I knew that intuitively, and so that was my my starting point.
So, which is very much like the starting point that many of the people that wind up doing more esoteric work tell us about, you know, having that kind of insight. And even the story of Einstein. Einstein did his first thought experiment about the speed of light and all of that when he was less than 16, I think.
Yes, a teenager,
Yeah, and that also, he called it a thought experiment, sure sounds like a shamanic journey to me.
Absolutely.
You know, he in his mind asked a question and said, show me, and got information. So I always love talking to people who started out in that place of insight and work from there. So, you know, you're one of us. I'm very glad to meet you. But you've taken it. You've now got multiple degrees in neuroscience. You've worked with some amazing people. One of the things in the material I read about what you're doing, and it's something that some of the other people that are doing this kind of work talk about, is the struggle to get past materialism in science.
Well, especially in neuroscience, because, you know, it's neuroscience is the study of the brain and the nervous system. And for a long, long time in my field, there was a central dogma. And the dogma was that mind is or can be reduced to what's going on in the brain electrically and chemically. So mind is synonymous with brain activity. So that's what neuroscientists thought for nearly a century. But a few decades ago, there were studies about the possibility of conscious mental activity, even during cardiac arrest. So I'm referring here to the so-called near-death experiences. And during the last 13 years, there have been five different studies conducted in the United States, but also in the Netherlands and in the UK, about conscious mental activity during cardiac arrest. And so according to the old mainstream neuroscience, there's no mental activity that is possible if there's no brain activity. And when there's a cardiac arrest, the heart stops, and so the blood flow to the brain stops very rapidly. And if you're measuring the electrical activity of the brain with a device we call an electroencephalogram, you'll see that the EEG, this is the acronym for the electroencephalogram, right. The EEG line becomes totally flat within usually 15 to 20 seconds. So in principle, in that kind of state, there's no perception that is possible, or no conscious activity, no memories, no emotions, no nothing. But the studies I'm talking about, and I've conducted my own studies regarding this question, well, these studies show that consciousness, perception, memories, self-awareness, and so on and so forth, are all possible even during a state of cardiac arrest. And so this is you know, major evidence showing that the old materialist view in neuroscience is totally wrong, that the brain is not the producer of mind, consciousness, and spirit. It's more like acting like an interface. So it's a bit like a TV set, for instance. So if you're altering the electronic components within the TV set, you will very likely create a distortion in terms of the sound and the images that you are receiving. But that doesn't mean that the program itself is contained within the TV set. So it's a bit the same kind of relationship between the mind and the brain. So the brain, like I said, acts more like a sort of interface or a transceiver, if you will. And of course, if you change something within the brain, either electrically or chemically, you will change the nature of the mental experience, but that doesn't mean that the experience itself, consciousness itself, is created by the brain.
Right, right. I remember reading a study where somebody had hydroencephaly, water on the brain. Yes. And most people who have that condition die, but a few people survived. Mm-hmm. And basically the head fills with fluid and the brain material becomes a very thin layer on the inside of the skull. So essentially the brain is gone. And one of those people went on to get advanced degrees in physics.
Yes, in England. It's a study that was done in the early 70s by a neurologist, John Lorber, and he studied a series of cases like this one. And in the case you're talking about, the guy had an IQ above 120. So that was
right. Which yes. You know, as soon as you know that's possible, it pretty much destroys the idea that the brain is the source or the functional necessity. For consciousness and thought and all the rest of the stuff. Obviously, somebody did it without it, so let's rethink this.
Yes, exactly. But these evidence are considered, you know, heretical They're still rejected by hard-nosed scientists in my field because they still cling to the old materialist ideology. They still believe that, you know, the universe can be reduced to material particles and fields, and that there's nothing else. And so and they're convinced of that, you know, so it's still this ideology, materialism, still influence greatly my field of research and the entire field of science. But the latest evidence challenging this materialist ideology are coming, and they keep coming. And so it's becoming obvious for a lot of people that this old materialist paradigm is crumbling now. But many scientists are still resisting, you know, to this right. Major paradigm shift, because they are also emotionally attached to their beliefs, and sure. They've built their own careers based on these beliefs, and it's a bit like 400 years ago. You know, the Earth, the question of whether the Earth was, or the Sun was revolving around the Earth, or vice versa. It right. took a long, long time for certain scientists to accept the new view, and it was the same thing for the flat Earth versus the round Earth, and you know, the same situation again 100 years ago with physics. It took about 20-30 years for quantum physics, the new physics, to become accepted by most physicists.
Right.
Yeah.
And even though most people have no clue what quantum physics is or how it works, but all of our wonderful miniaturized devices now are based on quantum physics. And
absolutely, yes.
But it's like so many things, even Newtonian physics, just because you can use it effectively and predict outcomes with it doesn't mean that there is a fundamental understanding of how it works.
Exactly.
Which is okay. That's the whole field of engineering, is using the way things work and making wonderful things with it. But in terms of a deeper understanding of the science, quantum physics is so profoundly strange for most people that they really can't wrap their head around it. It seems pretty straightforward to me because I live in a world in which there is that straddling of the material and the non-material. But if you are a materialist and your whole worldview and experience is that everything that is not physical is make-believe, then it's difficult to wrap your head around it. You know, the studio engineer just sent me a message in the background that says, "And you're a geek." Yeah, there are not many people that do both of the things that I do, that have been a geek a long time and do the mystical part of it as well. That's one of the struggles, obviously, and you're in the middle of that because your research is running against the old guard.
Yes, exactly, yes. So that's why I asked a number of my colleagues in various disciplines last year to participate in the redaction of what we call the manifesto for a post-materialist science. And famous people accepted to work on this document, including, you know, the biologist Rupert Sheldrake and Larry Dossey and Gary Schwartz and many other scientists. We're very well known, and so we believe now that there's enough evidence out there, empirical evidence, showing that the old materialist paradigm is incomplete. So we need something different, something new, and so that's why we use the term post-materialist refer to this new emerging paradigm,
which also includes them and gives them their due.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The work that I've had a little bit of access to is the stuff that Dean Radin has done, studying psi phenomena. And, I always love when there's hard science behind this stuff. So you've been doing neuroscience about these phenomena. What kinds of experiments have you created and what were the results?
Well, I've done many things. I started to study what was, if it was possible, for instance, to modify intentionally and consciously what's going on in the brain. So to do that, we were using emotionally laden films or pictures, and we were inducing very strong emotional responses within the brain, for instance, using erotic film excerpts.
Sure.
And so we were the first one to do this. And so we knew that these film excerpts were inducing very strong response in portions of the brain that we call the limbic system. It's a synonym with the emotional brain. And so we asked our subjects to, after that, in a different experimental condition, to take a distance from, to become a detached observer with regard to the stimuli, the film excerpts. And these people did not have any meditative experience at all. They were not meditators. They were not familiar with these meditative techniques. Yet they did something very similar to what is called mindfulness meditation. And when they did that, all the very strong activation in the limbic system in response to the emotional film excerpts, well, the activation was gone totally. So that's when we learned that we were not totally conditioned to react the way we do usually when we are not conscious or aware, that we had a great power. We were able to change at will what's happening in the brain. So we did that, and then after that, we investigated what was happening with a chemical messenger that is called serotonin in the brain. And serotonin is involved in all sorts of functions, but it's the main chemical messenger implicated in major depression and mood regulation. And we discovered that it was possible to modulate at will the production and release of this chemical messenger in the brain. And this was very an important finding. And so this is what I call the local action of mind and consciousness. It means that mind and consciousness can be seen as a force, really, which can transform what's going on in the brain, not only in terms of the activity of the brain, whether electric or chemical, but also in terms of the structure of the brain. So we did subsequent studies showing that it's possible to even change gray matter and white matter in the brain. And so this relates to the concept of neural plasticity.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's a very important aspect of the studies we did. But after that, I wanted to see also whether it was possible for consciousness to exert what is called non-local effect beyond the confine of the brain and the body. And to do this, I investigated people who had to be operated on because they had a problem at the heart level, and they had to become clinically dead for a period of 15 to 20 minutes, usually. So the medical doctors were changing their aorta at the heart level, and for this kind of surgery, you have to undergo hypothermia, and your heart is stopped for a number of minutes. And like I said, it was about 15 to 20 minutes in their case. So they were clinically dead for that period of time, and so we wanted to examine whether they were conscious during this period of time.
And I hate to interrupt you at the critical point in this story, but we have to go to a break. And when we come back, we'll pick up right where we were. My guest tonight is Dr. Mario Beauregard, who is a neuroscientist who does amazing stuff. And we will be back to hear the rest of this in a few minutes. This is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. And we're going to have some more fun in just a minute. Don't go nowhere.
These days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Dr. Mario Beauregard, who is a neuroscientist, and he was in the middle of a very dramatic part of the experiment when we had to go to the break. So why don't you tee us up again on what was going on and tell us what happened? Dr. Beauregard?
Yes?
We were interrupted by the break, so let's pick up the story where we left off.
Yeah, so we interviewed about 70 of these patients who all underwent this kind of surgery for their heart problems. And the we found that about 30% of them had some perception while they were in a state of cardiac arrest and clinically dead. And in one case, a woman was able to provide accurate details about the appearance of the surgeons and the surgical instruments that were used and so on and so forth. And we were able to confirm all these details with the members of the medical staff. And so it was what we call a case of veridical perception during cardiac arrest, which means that it's possible to, even though the brain is not functioning, we can operate at a mental level. We can be conscious, and like I said at the beginning, we can have perceptions and so on and so forth. And so this is an example of what we could call a non-local phenomenon or non-local mind. So it means that mind is not produced by the brain, like I explained before. It is using the brain, but it is not confined to the brain and the body, hence the expression non-local.
Right, right. And there are many mystical explanations for how all that works, but I'm absolutely fascinated with the confirmations that you and other scientists are coming up with that confirm what's been said in those mystical traditions for a long time.
That's right. Yes.
It always occurs to me, especially in physics, when they say, well, we don't know how this works. And I go, well, I know hundreds of people that can see it. So why don't we give you what we see and let's see if that informs where you can go? No, they never do that.
Unless the mystical person herself is the scientist. So in some cases, it can happen.
Right.
You were talking of Einstein. Einstein was quite a mystical person.
Oh, absolutely. And lots of people don't realize that. I think he probably went into a trance state playing music because he was a violinist.
Yes.
Either that or smoking his pipe. But whatever he used to relax, he would eventually go off into what he called thought experiments and ask a question and get information. Usually it sounds like, usually visually. And the difference with people like him is he could come back and do the math.
Absolutely.
Rather than saying, oh, this is fascinating, and it looks like this, and not be able to take it the next step into the scientific realm. So, but, you know, so for example, we talk about there being this phenomenon that is energy and not physical matter. And a lot of the mystical traditions, some people like me and other people that I know see it as a framework made out of light. That's usually called the matrix or the grid. And that was described in the Upanishads in the Hindu tradition as a network of jewels.
Yes.
Thousands of years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was called the intranet, right?
Right. Yeah. And so there is all of this confirmation that there's something that lots of people see in the non-physical seeing that maybe is informative and a way to look at this differently. Could you do, is that useful to you? And I have yet to run into anyone in the science, in physics who goes, well, yeah, we should look at that. And there are many, many other things like that where there are lots of people who have insights that might be informative as starting points for experimentation. And the two worlds, other than in individuals like you, where you have both sides of it, or individuals like Einstein, the scientific community is not sitting there going, there's got to be somebody that knows this.
No. No. Usually not.
Right. No. Right. So you've had the various brain experiments confirming that the brain is not the seat of consciousness and mind.
Yeah. Yes, and I also I was the first one to investigate what's happening in the brain during spiritual states and mystical experiences. So I did a study that became famous around the world with Carmelite nuns about 12 years ago. And so we were using a form of scanner that is called functional magnetic resonance imaging. Mm-hmm. And so we measured what was happening in the brain of the nuns while they were in a contemplative state. So according to their belief system, they were in a state of union with what they call God. And so we measured what was happening with the scanner. So this and the goal was to determine whether there was an activation in one specific region of the brain that is called the temporal lobe, because about 30 years ago, a few neurologists claimed that all spiritual and mystical experiences could be reduced simply to a misfiring of neurons in this region of the brain. And so we wanted to investigate this question. And sure enough, the temporal lobe was activated, but many other brain regions were activated as well. So it's... these experiences are associated with a complex network of brain regions. But I did not interpret this as meaning that you could reduce the what the nuns were saying about their experience to simply brain activity. Right. And contrary to a number of my colleagues in my field. And so now what I think is that the brain is, like I said, is like an interface and a transducer. So it's a bit like a radio station. So you, right. you with your radio set, you can dial a number of frequencies. And usually, we're always resonating with a number, a very restricted number of frequencies. And these frequencies allow us to perceive what we call the so-called external world and what's happening mentally in terms of our subjective experiences, but that's about it. And if you're always dialing the same frequencies, the same channels, you always experience the same things. But some people, like you say, like yourself, are able to tune to other frequencies, other channels. And
it's actually a metaphor I use a lot. That yes. Most people in the world are on AM radio. Uh-huh. There isn't much there. It's hard to tune in. It's actually coded uh-huh. differently from mm-hmm. radio frequencies that work more effectively. And there's talk radio and people arguing and a little bit of music, mm-hmm. but not much going on. And then outside of that is FM radio and TV, and you know all the other frequencies are there, but they don't pick them up because they don't have the receiver for it. Mm-hmm. But there are people that are broadband who pick up various frequencies or all the frequencies and then need to learn how to interpret them and how to live with the fact that they've got an experience that is not the common experience. And that's actually
a good analogy. Yeah.
I've worked in locked psych units where the people who had voices were talking to entities that I could see.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been
so in
a number of
culture,
psychiatrists. Yeah, but many psychiatrists suspect that in the Western world, but they don't dare say that publicly. They don't.
Right. Because, right. And but I watched the frustration of the conversation of the psychiatrist who did not believe that the experience could be real, and the patient who knew the experience was real. So they were in two different realities and they couldn't possibly come together in it. But it was, I was doing it in the middle of my training, which was a fairly strange thing to do. But there was a very concrete reality from my perception to what those people were experiencing. And in another culture, when they were young, the tribe would have said, oh, this person is talented. We need to get them together with these people who are also talented so that they can be a benefit to everybody and they'll grow up using that talent. Yeah. And they would have been a medium or they would have been a shaman or whatever it was that used those skills, trained by the other people in the tribe that used those skills.
Yeah, like in Brazil, for instance, I've been there a few times and you have mediums working with medical doctors in hospitals, in several hospitals across the country.
So, you know, instead of that, they become more and more eccentric. And when their eccentricity becomes unmanageable, they wind up in a psych hospital.
Yes.
So our loss and their loss, but in other parts of the world, it's managed in a very different way so that everybody wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's exactly. And so when you we consider scientifically all the empirical evidence that we've discussed so far, we see very clearly that we need to expand our framework regarding what we consider to be reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's the new post-materialist paradigm I was talking about earlier.
Right, right. And, of course, the problem is the stigma that's attached to anyone who has an altered reality. And, you know, when I talk to psychiatrists, I always start the conversation with, I will have to acknowledge up front that I have at least four diagnoses in the DSM-5. but I'm not crazy. So you're going to have to acknowledge that I'm not crazy in spite of the fact that I am going to describe phenomena that you could diagnose.
This is very challenging for them.
Very challenging. Very challenging. And they have a responsibility to make those diagnoses based on what they observe. For the safety of everybody. So when they run into somebody who is clearly functioning totally fine, but has those experiences, it's a big challenge. I love the Salvador Dali quote, you know, the only difference between me and somebody who's crazy is that I'm not crazy.
That's good.
I'm totally functional. So, you know, there's all this strange stuff going on, but I'm not crazy, so what are you going to do with that?
Yes. But you know that there's a movement of researchers within psychiatry, and many of these researchers are from Brazil, and they're trying to integrate spiritual experiences and alter the states of consciousness within science, but they don't want to pathologize these experiences because they discovered during the last few years that people having these sorts of experience, very often, they are more healthy from a mental point of view than the general population. So there's increasing evidence showing this now.
Right, right. Typically have more creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, very bright intellects and... The problem is the struggle of being stigmatized and trying to figure out who you are and where you are and being told constantly that you're weird and you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to be able to talk to some of those folks as well. So, mm-hmm.
Well, I could give you some names. One of them was one of the writers of the Our Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's a very famous psychiatrist in Brazil. Yeah. And he studied in the United States for a few years before. There's a shift. There's a change. Things are changing, and because this this old view of psychiatry was really related to the old materialist paradigm we were talking about. So
right.
If you believe that matter is the only reality, of course, all spiritual and mystical experience are considered delusions created by a misfiring brain. But if you recognize that reality is much larger, then there's no problem anymore.
Right. And of course, part of it is the direction that things have gone from various kinds of therapies that are interactive to medicating people.
Oh yeah.
Which makes the hallucinations and delusions go away, but makes everything else go away too.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes everything turn gray. Yeah. And I don't know exactly how and when that happened, and it obviously is a safety issue, and it's got to do with the whole movement towards prescribing rather than doing other procedures in all of medicine. But it's really shut down a lot of the options and a lot of the ways of approaching people that I know existed 30, 40 years ago when I had odd jobs in and out of psych hospitals and at residential treatment centers. The approaches were totally different. So,
Yeah, but this biological approach within psychiatry is increasingly challenged by more and more people, and even by sometimes psychiatrists themselves, by a number of psychiatrists at least.
Yeah, the stuff I saw basically said that most of the assumptions are not supported by hard science.
Yes,
exactly. The stuff got built around various concepts, but it never got confirmed, and they just kept running with it, which happens in a lot of fields.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, when it's this kind of stuff, it's people's lives that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that people know how to find you, because we kind of jumped to the break. Give people the best way to get in touch with you, your website, or?
Well, yes, the website. So it's Dr. Mario Beauregard. So it's Dr. Mario, M-A-R-I-O, Beauregard, B-E-A-U-R-E-G-A-R-D. All of this in one word, .com. So that's the best way. And on my website, people can join me if they have questions or comments. So it's possible. They have access to an email address.
Great. And I know you're also on Facebook.
Yes, I have a professional page on Facebook since a few months. Yep. And so it's Dr. Mario Beauregard. Very simple.
And I encourage people to get in touch and also look at the videos and other things there, because the work is absolutely fascinating and right on the cutting edge at this point, which is such an exciting place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a few more minutes. What else do you want the listeners to
be thinking
about?
One thing that is very important to realize is that, contrary to what the old science was telling us, we're not sophisticated biological machines totally determined by our neurons, our genes, our chemical messengers. There's now studies showing that we can modify the activity of our genes, the expression of our genes, depending on how we think, what kind of emotions we have, and so on and so forth. And so this is a new field that is called epigenetics. And
right.
It shows that, so it's the same thing with the brain. So you can, like I said before, you can really change what's happening in your brain in terms of the activity, but also in terms of the structure itself. And so if you do, for instance, even 10 minutes of meditation every day. If you do that for a few months, you already have changed the structure of your brain, and you're enhancing its functioning. So we're the message is that we are very, very powerful and much more powerful than we ever thought. Also, the other thing is that people who are experiencing things spiritual, or mystical, and so on and so forth, do not believe that you're crazy, because very likely you're not. because these experiences happen to a lot of people, but most people do not want to talk about that publicly because they are afraid of social right. judgment.
Yeah. Right. And there's also the line of the interaction between interest in that and having the experience spontaneously, and people that either had that experience by using drugs or take drugs, who, and they already have those experiences. And in my experience anyway, taking the drugs just makes a mess of all of it. I've watched too many people get in trouble with it. Yeah. So we live in a culture where it's the easy fix and the easy high, and people get into all kinds of problems, especially very sensitive people. So
to circumvent this this problem, I've devised a procedure that is based on a phenomenon that is called the resonance response within the brain. So, for instance, if you you manipulate the frequencies of certain sounds, and that the sounds are embedded within a music designed for relaxation and meditation, it's possible to change the brainwave activity very rapidly, usually within 5 to 10 minutes. And using this kind of approach now, I'm giving workshops, and I'm helping people to experience altered states of consciousness. And in when you guide them in these states in a very safe environment, and they trust you, most people can have access to the spiritual world. They can experience beautiful things that can be very helpful, even from a clinical perspective. So I'm seeing a lot of people who have had trauma when they were younger, for instance, and in these states, there's an expansion of consciousness, and it's more easy for the person to free herself from, you know, all the pain and the traumas of the past, and also to reconnect with, you know, the spiritual essence. I'm starting to do work with this and research with this kind of approach, it's very helpful.
That's very exciting stuff, and exciting for me because I used HoloSync meditation materials for over a decade. Okay. So I know the power of using the audios and being able to change brain function. Yeah. We could keep talking for a really long time, except we're running out of time. So I hope you'll be willing to come back, and we can choose a focus topic and just keep the conversation going on, because this is just fascinating, and I'm so excited about your work, and I really appreciate your taking the time to be on the show. My guest tonight is Dr. Mario Beauregard. His website is drmarioberauregard.com. He's a neuroscientist, and thank you so much for taking time and being with us tonight.
Thanks to you.
And if you happen to get curious about who this strange guy David is and what in the world does he do, you can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable technology I could come up with for getting in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a free 20-minute assessment of whatever's going on with a person, place, situation, and we can see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want more information about the Farkas Files, it's cleverly hiding at thefarkasfiles.com. And we've been doing this now for 4.5 years. So the archive has hundreds and hundreds of interviews with amazing people. And Empower Radio, which streams 24/7 with positive programs all day, also has the Farkas Files on at 9 p.m. every night with the live recording of the show on Thursdays. So take advantage of Empower Radio. You can find us on TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, iTunes podcasts, many of the streaming media resources, and take advantage of all these positive approaches that are available on Empower Radio, because how great is that? So once again, thank you so much for taking a part of your life and a part of your day and spending it with me. It's very exciting to me that people all over the world tune in and share this with us. So this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.